Welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're walking a bit of a tightrope.
Yeah, a mathematical tightrope, really.
Right. We are zooming in on this very specific battlefield in mathematics where, you know, the rules of order and the rules of chaos are fighting to a literal standstill.
It is a totally fascinating place to be. We're talking about a scenario where you have a system trying desperately to smooth itself out to find equilibrium while simultaneously being bombarded by random noise that just wants to rough it up.
And usually in physics or math, one side wins, right? Like either the noise takes over and everything's a mess,
yeah,
or the smoothing takes over, you get a nice clean curve.
Exactly.
But today we're looking at this specific dimension where these two forces fight to a perfect draw.
That's right. We are exploring the stochastic heat flow, specifically in two dimensions. And our guide for this journey is a really remarkable paper titled Stochastic Heat Flow by Moments.
Right, by Li Cheng Zai. It's ArTiv's paper 2410.14657V2 for those keeping track at home. Now, stochastic heat flow by moments sounds pretty dense, but stick with us. Because what Zai is doing here is proposing a new way to describe this infinite chaotic process using just a handful of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It's like describing the entire complexity of a galaxy using just a fingerprint.
It really is a fundamental shift in perspective.
Mm.
The mission of this deep dive is to understand how we can pin down this elusive mathematical object, the stochastic heat flow, not by building it brick by brick, but by checking its fingerprints.
Specifically, its first four moments.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's unpack this. We need to set the stage first. The battlefield is the stochastic heat equation. I think most people have an intuition for the regular heat equation. If I put a hot pan on a cold counter, the heat spreads out.
Right, that's diffusion. It's a smoothing process. Mathematically, the heat equation flattens out peaks and fills in valleys. It wants everything to be the exact same temperature.
It craves order.
It craves order.
Yeah.
But this is the stochastic heat equation, so we're adding stochasticity.
Randomness.
Randomness. We're adding a forcing term. Imagine that while the heat is trying to spread out smoothly, you are constantly randomly injecting energy kicks at every point in space and time.
You're disturbing the system.
Right.
I love the analogy we talked about earlier. It's like trying to smooth out a bedsheet while a bunch of cats are running around underneath it.
That is actually a surprisingly accurate analogy. The sheet wants to lie flat. That's the diffusion. But the cats, the noise, they keep creating peaks and valleys. Now, the paper uses another analogy, which is very famous in physics.
Lay it on me.
Directed polymers in random environments.
Directed polymers, which sounds like chemistry class.
Think of it more like a path finding its way. Imagine a string or a polymer chain trying to stretch out between two points. Naturally, the string wants to be straight. That's the lowest energy state.
Okay.
That corresponds to the smoothing or heat diffusion.
So the string wants to be a tight line.
But now, imagine that string is passing through a random environment. Maybe a material full of impurities or jagged obstacles. The string gets attracted to some spots, repelled by others. It gets snagged. It gets bumped.
So it wants to be straight, but the environment forces it to be crinkly to get through.
Precisely. And this is where dimensions matter. This is the crucial part of the setup. If you do this in one dimension, just a line, the noise is incredibly powerful. The string gets very rough. The cats under the bedsheet win entirely.
Chaos dominates.
Conversely, if you go to three dimensions or higher, there's so much room to move around that the smoothing effect dominates. The string stays relatively straight. The noise is just a minor annoyance.
Wow. Okay. So 1D is total chaos, 3D is mostly order, but we are talking about 2D.
Two dimensions, the critical dimension. In 2D, the smoothing power of heat diffusion and the roughening power of the random noise are exactly balanced. They scale at the same rate.
It's stalemate.
It's a total stalemate. In the paper, Tsai notes that this is called marginally relevant in disordered systems.
Marginally relevant.
Right, which just means the noise is strong enough to prevent the system from ever becoming smooth, but not strong enough to completely destroy the overarching structure.
And to make this specific object, the stochastic heat flow, actually appear, you have to tune the temperature of the system to a specific critical value. It's like tuning an old radio dial.
That's a really good way to put it. If you turn the dial just a tiny bit to the left, below the critical value. The paper explains that the system behaves like a Gaussian process.
Which means what exactly for, you know, the non-mathematicians out there?
It means it's statistically normal. It has a standard bell curve distribution. It's random, sure, but it's predictable randomness, standard white noise.
But if you hit that critical temperature,
then you get the stochastic heat flow.
Right.
It is an intricate yet universal object. It's no longer just simple Gaussian noise. It becomes this complex, fractal-like structure that has honestly baffled mathematicians for a long time.
Why is it so hard to describe, though? Like, if it's universal, shouldn't it be somewhat simple?
The problem is that because the noise and the smoothing are perfectly balanced, the math gets incredibly messy. As you zoom in, the driving noise becomes independent of the process in the limit. This entirely rules out what we call pathwise descriptions.
Meaning you can't just trace the line.
Right. You can't just say the polymer went here, then here, then here.
Yeah.
You have to describe the distribution of all possible paths.
So you can't describe the bedsheet. You have to describe the probability cloud of where the bedsheet might be.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so that brings us to the old way versus the new way presented in this paper. Because Psi isn't the first person to discover this object.
No, previous work, specifically a citation in the paper referred to as CSZ23A, they prove this thing exists using discrete polymers. The traditional approach is constructive.
Constructive like building with Legos.
Exactly like that. Imagine you wanted to find a curve. You might build it out of Lego bricks first. You make a jagged line with Legos. Then you use smaller Legos, then even smaller ones.
Oh, I see.
Eventually, as the Legos get infinitely small, you get your curve.
That makes sense. You build a model, shrink the parts, and see what you're left with.
It works. But there's a huge catch. Your final definition depends heavily on those Legos. It relies on the pre-limit model. It's hard to prove that if I use, say, wooden blocks instead of Legos, I get the exact same curve.
Ah, okay. You define it by how you built it, not by what it actually is. It's like defining bread by giving someone a specific recipe for sourdough. If I bake a rye loaf, is it still bread? The definition doesn't tell me.
Precisely. Psi's ambition in this paper is to create an independent approach, an axiomatic characterization.
Axiomatic.
Right. Right. Instead of saying the stochastic heat flow is what you get when you shrink these polymers, he wants to say the stochastic heat flow is any process that obeys these specific rules.
I like that. He wants a checklist.
He wants a checklist. And Psi lays out four specific rules or axioms in definition 1.2 of the paper. If a mathematical process follows these four rules, it is the stochastic heat flow.
Okay, lay them on me. What are the four commandments?
The first three are actually standard housekeeping for this kind of probability theory, but they set the boundaries. First, it must be a continuous process valued in measures.
Which in plain English means...
It means it evolves smoothly over time. It doesn't just teleport, and it's a measure, meaning it's describing a probability cloud, a density of where the polymer could be, not a single rigid point.
Got it. Rule one, it's a smooth cloud. Rule two.
It must satisfy the Chapman-Kolmogorov equation. This is about consistency. If you want to calculate the probability of the polymer going from point A to point C,
you can calculate the probability of going A to B and then B to C and combine them.
Right. The journey matters. You can break the trip into legs and the math should still hold up.
Logical. Rule three.
Independence. What happens in a future time interval is driven by new noise that is completely independent of the past noise. The cats under the bedsheet tomorrow don't care about what the cats did yesterday.
Fair enough. Random is random. Now, those seem pretty logical, but the paper says the fourth one is the kicker.
The fourth axiom is the moment formula, and this is where the magic really happens.
We probably need to define moments for the listener who hasn't taken a stats class in a while.
Sure. In statistics, moments are basically just numbers that describe the shape of a distribution.
Okay.
The first moment is the average, where's the middle? The second moment is the variance, how spread out is it? The third tells you if it's lopsided, the fourth tells you how fat the tails are, and so on.
So usually, if you know all the moments, average, spread, skew, etc., you know exactly what the distribution looks like. It's a fingerprint.
Usually. That is common wisdom. But here is the major surprise. In the stochastic heat flow, these moments grow incredibly fast. The paper mentions they grow double exponentially.
Double exponentially. That sounds massive.
It is massive. Think of regular exponential growth. 2, 4, 8, 16. Double exponential is like taking a number to a power and then taking that entirely new number to another power. The numbers explode.
So the fingerprint is essentially smudged.
Way worse than smudged. When moments grow that fast, they usually become totally useless for defining the object. It's called an indeterminate moment problem in math.
Okay.
There are just too many possible shapes that could fit those massive numbers. It's like trying to identify a person, but their fingerprint covers the entire room.
So common wisdom says this shouldn't work. You shouldn't be able to use moments to define this chaotic 2D system. But Sai says you can.
Sai finds a loophole. The breakthrough is that instead of looking at the moments of the process at a single snapshot in time, he looks at the moments over all time intervals. He looks at the correlation of the process across time.
Okay, so by adding the time dimension to the fingerprint, it becomes distinct again. But here's the part that blew my mind reading this. He doesn't need all the infinite moments.
No.
He needs four. Just the first four moments.
It is truly remarkable. The paper establishes that if you have a process that satisfies the first three rules and its first four moments match the specific formula derived from physics, then you're done. You have uniquely identified the stochastic heat flow.
Why four? Why not two? Usually in physics, if you know the mean and the variance the first two, you're pretty good to go.
That works perfectly for Gaussian things, like standard Brownian motion. But remember, at this critical 2D point, the system is much more complex. The second moment, the variance actually fails to capture the roughness adequately.
The second moment is a low-res photo.
Exactly. It's too blurry. You might easily confuse the stochastic heat flow with standard Brownian motion. You need a higher resolution to see the texture, the spikes, the sheer chaos.
So moments one and two are blurry. Moment three gets clear. Moment four is high def enough to say, yes, that's the SHF.
Precisely. Specifically, four is the smallest even number that provides enough information to control the error terms in his proof. It's the minimum amount of data needed to lock down this infinite universe.
That is so cool. It feels almost like a cheat code. Enter these four numbers to unlock the universe.
And the way he proves this is fascinating, too. He uses something called Lindeberg's exchange method.
I looked this up beforehand. It sounds like a mechanic swapping out car parts.
That's a great analogy. Imagine you have two complex machines. Machine A is the real stochastic heat flow, if it exists. Machine B is a candidate process you've built that happens to have the same first four moments. You want to prove machine A and machine B are identical.
So you can't just look at them and say they look the same. You have to prove it mathematically.
Right. So Lindeberg's method says, let's swap out the parts of machine A with the parts of machine B, one tiny piece at a time. You take a small time interval of the real flow and replace it with the candidate flow.
And because they share the same moments.
The error, or the difference caused by that swap, is incredibly tiny, completely negligible. You keep swapping parts piece by piece until machine A has purely become machine B.
Right.
And because the error at each step was so small, the total difference between the original machine and the new one is effectively zero.
So by proving you can swap the parts without breaking the machine, you prove there's only one type of machine. Uniqueness.
Precisely. And this brilliantly bypasses all the messy coarse graining and approximation struggles of the previous papers. It's a remarkably clean, logical proof. If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck up to the fourth moment, it is the stochastic heat flow.
So what does this new definition get us? Aside from a cleaner mathematical proof, does it tell us anything new about what this object actually is?
It does. And this connects to a concept that I think is the most mind-bending part of the entire paper. Black noise.
Black noise. That sounds like a sci-fi weapon or something terrifying out in deep space.
It's a term coined by the mathematician Cyrilson. To understand it, think about white noise. White noise is standard randomness. It has equal intensity at different frequencies. It contains information. You can hear it. You can record it.
Right. It's static.
Black noise is very counterintuitive. It's a type of noise that if you look at it locally, if you zoom in on just a tiny patch of space-time, it contains absolutely no classical information.
Wait. How can noise contain no information?
It's subtle. It implies that the noise is cancellative. The fluctuations are so wild and so frequent that they basically cancel each other out in a way that leaves no trace if you try to measure it in the standard way.
So it's invisible.
In a sense, yes. It essentially disappears if you try to isolate the driving noise from the process itself. In the paper, they explain that the stochastic heat flow is a black noise. This means the roughness is so intrinsic, so deeply woven into the fabric of the process that you cannot separate the signal from the noise.
So you can't say, here is the heat flow and here is the noise affecting it. They have fundamentally fused into one thing.
Yes. In the Lego building approach, the constructive approach, you start with signal and noise as separate things and mash them together. But this result shows that in the limit, they fuse. The stochastic heat flow is a black noise.
That is wild. It's like the system becomes a singularity of randomness.
And because of Sai's axiomatic approach, proving this black noise property becomes much more straightforward. The paper mentions a recent work where they use these exact axioms to prove that the heat flow is black noise. It confirms that this 2D critical state creates a fundamentally different kind of randomness than we see in 1D or 3D.
There is one more connection we have to make, which involves the Delta Bose gas.
Ah, yes. This brings us straight into quantum mechanics.
Because so far we've been talking about heat, polymers, probability. Where do quantum particles come in?
Well, when Psi needs to calculate those four moments to check his fingerprint, he needs a formula. Where does he get the formula? He gets it from the Delta Bose gas.
Which is?
It's a model of interacting particles' bosons that interact via a delta potential. That basically means they only interact when they are literally on top of each other. They pass right through each other unless they collide perfectly.
And what's the connection to our heat flow?
The moments of the stochastic heat flow, those exact fingerprints we talked about, are described by operators related to this quantum gas.
So the math describing how heat moves in a random 2D world is the exact same math describing how quantum particles interact.
Exactly. This is the beauty of universality. These mathematical structures, the heat flow, the Delta Bose gas, they pop up in completely different fields because they represent fundamental truths about how systems scale and interact.
So Psi actually uses the quantum physics formulas to solve the probability problem.
He does. The paper uses the explicit formulas from the quantum world to calculate the bounds needed for his probability proof. He borrows tools from quantum mechanics to prove a theorem about a macroscopic heat equation.
It really highlights how interconnected these fields are. You can't really just do probability anymore without knowing some physics and vice versa.
Especially when you are dealing with these critical dimensions. That's where the walls between disciplines just completely break down.
So let's wrap this up. We started with a complex, infinite mess. The stochastic heat flow in 2D. A place where smoothing and roughening are fighting to a complete standstill.
A critical point that is notoriously hard to define mathematically because the usual tools just break.
And the main takeaway from Psi's paper is that we don't have to build this thing from scratch to understand it. We just need to check the rules.
We moved from a constructive definition building with Legos to an axiomatic one. We ask, is it continuous? Is it consistent? Is it independent? And crucially, do its first four moments match the fingerprint?
And if the answer is yes, we have captured the beast. We know it exists, we know it's unique, and we know it behaves like this strange black noise.
And we know that the number four is surprisingly powerful. It's the exact threshold of resolution we need to distinguish this specific chaos from everything else.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it? We have this critical dimension of two, we have this critical temperature, and we have this critical number of moments four.
It raises a profound question about the architecture of math itself. Why four? Why two dimensions? It suggests that these integers aren't arbitrary. They are structural, load-bearing pillars of the mathematical universe.
Exactly. It makes me wonder what other perfect balances exist out there in the universe, in biology, in economics, in the stars. Systems that are currently looking like total chaos to us, simply because we haven't found the right four numbers to identify them yet.
That is a very provocative thought, and honestly, likely very true.
Something to mull over next time you're watching cream swirl into your coffee. A stochastic heat flow in action, perhaps. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.
A pleasure as always.
See you next time.